So, we have officially passed the summer solstice as of Friday, June 21st. And once again, CVU US will be celebrating the summer by exploring spirituality through the arts. This has been a fun series to present over the last few years, but what is interesting is that it has not turned out to be a laid-back summertime and the living is easy undertaking. But not just for summer, but throughout the year, the worship ministry starts thinking about and is working on upcoming services for months in advance. What is different about the summer is that we have this focus on art. What is art? Who is the artist among us? What does art have to do with spirituality? Is art for the benefit of the artist or for the benefit of the one viewing or experiencing the art? As the worship ministry explores these questions and starts to approach potential guest speakers, it is interesting how many artists we approach who believe what they do is art, but feel they may not have much to share with a congregation looking for spiritual inspiration. I can't count how many times the response has gone something like, "Well, I guess I could talk about my art, but I'm not very religious." There has frequently been surprise that a religious community would want them to come and speak for what, quite honestly, may be what they do for work. If you have attended past services, past summer services, I would not be surprised if you have heard guest speakers start with those very comments. But what has been rewarding for me in helping guests understand what we are looking for is asking those questions that give them the opportunity to start an internal dialogue to answer those questions. Where does their talent come from? Who or what inspired them to develop their craft? What would their lives be like without their art? What has come easy and what has been a labor? As the conversation develops, the personal stories emerge, and they come to us with compelling stories of inspiration and struggle. They share snippets of their artistry with us, and we feel blessed in their having done so. Recently, I had the great pleasure of reconnecting with a friend who I had not seen in several decades. At one point, I had heard rumors that she had gone through quite a rough time with her health. Upon visiting a mutual friend, I inquired if she had a current address for our friend. So I wrote, and she responded. We emailed a few times, and finally she was visiting Vermont, and we met up for a lengthy chat. We picked right up where we had left off so many years ago. Being quite comfortable, I inquired about her health. Her life had changed dramatically, and she felt she would never have her old energy back. Now, I won't go into her entire diagnosis, but it included a rare, debilitating disease, which we seldom hear of, and concluded with a cancer diagnosis as well. Our conversation took many positive turns. She felt she had learned what was important in life and how to accept help. She even joked about how hard it was to meet people and make new friends when she had moved away from Vermont, but her illness opened up a new world of many companions. Dealing with her illness, she had put much of her limited energy into her art, and in particular, her weaving. Now, thankfully, she is in remission, doing well, and volunteering to teach art at a local cancer center. What struck me most about what she said that day was how important it was for her to volunteer with patients because everyone is an artist. They may not know it. Something may be blocking their ability to create, but she firmly believed that everyone has a spark that is creativity and that she is not so much a teacher, but a facilitator, helping patients to express their emotions through their art. So this conversation brought my mind back to earlier days when I had been intrigued with the concept by a controversial artist who believed that everyone was an artist and society was merely the sculpture designed by everyone's contribution. And before I go any further, I apologize to any professors or students of art whose knowledge in this area is much more extensive than mine. In fact, I had no idea of the name of the artist I was thinking of and had to Google numerous words and sentences before I finally stumbled upon Joseph Beuys. Therefore, you need not worry that I plan to go into a dissertation on the life and work of Joseph Beuys. But suffice it to say, his concept is certainly similar to the Shakespearean line of all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. So this brings me back to the worship ministry. How do we define art? Who do we invite as our guest speakers? Are we interested only in art that has lasted the test of time, or is all art impermanent? Museums are full of artifacts. Artifacts from all over the world are preserved, restored, cataloged, displayed, bought, sold. They're sought after. And then often hidden away in storage only to be rediscovered decades or even centuries later. When the world witnessed intentional destruction of works of art, such as the statues of Buddha carved into the cliffsides of the Banyan Valley in central Afghanistan by the Taliban, it was not only shocking, but deeply disturbing. Destruction of art in such a manner is an aggressive act intended to annihilate a people's culture, their society, and their identity. Ironically, it is the teaching of Buddha that cultivates a practice of non-attachment and the impermanent nature of everything. Think of your favorite teacup as already broken. Then when it breaks, you do not need to be upset over the loss, but can appreciate and have gratitude for how well the cup has served you. The more we can develop this attitude towards the teacup, the more we can develop this relation of detachment and appreciation to every aspect of our lives. In Tibetan Buddhist culture, there is a ritual of creating amazingly beautiful mandalas from colored sand. To the monks who create these works of art, the process is a focused meditation. Each mandala created for a specific purpose. The skill involved can take several years of training, and each mandala will require many, many hours to create. Upon completion, there will be prayers and ceremony, but then the mandala is purposely destroyed. The sands may be left to blow away in the winds, but more commonly, the sands of the mandala will be purposely mixed together with intentional sweeping motions. The act of destruction can be quite mesmerizing and a beautiful and intriguing work of art in its own right. So does this Tibetan practice differ much from our Western traditions of creating and letting go? Have you ever been deeply involved with a theatrical production? And I'm sure many here have. Maybe you wrote a play. Maybe that is far as it went. Is the play sitting in a drawer somewhere? But maybe to be revived, maybe not. Maybe you were a director or producer. Maybe an actor. No, you were the one who designed or put together the scenery or costumes. No, I think you were the one who figured out the lighting, or was it the sound? Oh, you were the one in the orchestra, that's right. It was Broadway and ran for several years. Nope, sorry, I remember. It was the community play that you worked on for several months, and it ran for a week. It was brilliant, so provocative, yet humorous. Then it was over. The colored sands of the entirety swept away, making room for life's next production. I would argue that no matter how much we save, protect, restore, and share our creative moments, most art is fleeting. Now, I in no way mean to detract from the great works of art and the artists who have dedicated their lives to honing their skills. It is no secret that once an artist has made a significant impact on society and is recognized for their work, that we turn to them frequently, asking them to share more and more. Sometimes to the detriment of the artist. But I do believe there is something of value to be contemplated in Joseph Boy's theory that everyone is an artist and that what we bring forth, if even unknowingly, contributes to the sculpture that is our world. Our sculpture is an ever-changing creation. Some portions always in the early stages of creation, while other aspects in varying stages and degrees of their inevitable deterioration. In our chalice lighting today, we are being called to beautify our aching world. So are we being called to be artists? Because not all art is beautiful. But the power of art is that it holds and expresses someone's truth. When asked if a piece of art needs to be beautiful, Kathleen Grace, who's an artist, art consultant, museum educator, and gallery curator, responded thoughtfully, "No, artwork conveys ideas, thoughts, and emotion. It is a means of expression. It does not have to be beautiful to have impact. In fact, some of the most expressive art, art that has had and still has impact, were not. The idea of a pretty picture limits what art is. Art is the story of us and our experiences, knowledge, beliefs, and ways. We as humans are not necessarily pretty pictures. We are life and all of its expressions. Art can be confrontational as well as comforting. There is a means in our stories that convey our truth, but they aren't always beautiful, are not always pretty. We as humans are beautiful in our ways, but we are also capable of the horrific, and art can tell that story as well. So what inspires us to share our truth? What is that spark? Are you the one who has to do when the spirit says do? Is your inspiration and motivation internal or external? Spiritually, I consider myself agnostic. I remain one step away from atheist in that I tend to find my driving urge internal, something coming from deep inside that must be expressed. But I find when walking this earth, I also look to something external to stand by me and give me strength. Kumbaya. Kumbaya. Come by me. Is it God? Is it spirit? As most of you, I have been through many experiences of losing loved ones to death, and I have continued to hold the belief that when one has passed, they are gone. They do not live in some heaven in the sky looking down on me. But walking up the few steps to deliver the eulogy for my aunt, who I had been primary caregiver in the last stages of her life, I found myself calling upon her to help me through. Stand with me, hold me up, give me strength. But does it matter if my spark comes from a different place than your spark? If ultimately we are all in the act of transforming our society by contributing to the social sculpture that is our world. I love the words of Anna Mendelsohn, founder and director of the Autism Theater Project, when describing the meaning of art. She says, "To me, art at its core is inclusive. It's inclusive in form, topic, and hopefully in creators and audience. Because art can be anything, anything we want it to be about anything we want it to be about, and be done by and for anyone. Art at its highest form brings people together and helps us reflect on our humanity. Through art, we honor what makes us unique and we celebrate what makes us all one. Be a gift to our aching world. Where there is beauty, amplify it. Where beauty is hidden, reveal it. Where beauty is ruined, restore it. Where beauty is absent, create it. I dream of a world where all art is beautiful. A world with no war, a world with no poverty, a world with no oppression, a world with no borders. But that is not the world we have sculpted thus far. So thank goodness, then, for the art that is honest and speaks truth and opens our hearts and minds to the reality of life. We are building a masterpiece. Let us choose wisely our colored sands. Amen. Our last hymn is We'll Build a Land, number 121 in the gray.